No area of Wisconsin law has been changed, rewritten more often than laws covering our state election laws in the last 5 or 6 years. Lawsuits, new lawsuits, injunctions, it's all. So where does everything stand since we're having a major election on November 8th? We're going to elect, of course, a president, U.S. Senate, members of Congress, and members of the legislature. So I want to thank our two guests. Andrea Kaminsky is executive director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin. Mike Haas is administrator with the State Elections Commission. Thanks for coming in. Sure. Well, let's take, okay, in 2012, Mike, we had 3,062,000, and that was a voter turnout of about
73%.
73%. Are you ready to make a projection today?
Not quite yet. Not quite yet. We're trying to crunch numbers. We try to look back at elections that have similar offices on the ballot. We have, obviously, U.S. Senate race in addition to the presidential. So we try to find comparable elections in the past, try to gauge a little bit of the voter mood and make an educated guess, and we haven't quite finished that process.
And there are how many registered voters in Wisconsin?
A little bit north of 3.5 million registered voters currently.
3.5. Mm-hmm. Andrea, you have closely followed all these changes, all the lawsuits. What do you think are the biggest changes that people should be aware of for November 8th?
Well, everybody should be aware that most of us will have to show a photo ID at the polls or when we go to vote, or if we're voting by absentee, we also have to show a photo ID. And even though there have been some court rulings and people have gotten a little confused, and all of us have this summer, the fact is the voter ID law is in effect, and the easy answer is most of us will have to show that ID. It's the other thing is that the sooner people get registered and get ready to vote, I think the better it'll be, because that'll save everybody time at the polls and make for a good, smooth election.
This is the first presidential that people will have to show a photo ID, right? Mm-hmm. Well, the term photo ID is very vague, so what's acceptable?
There are a number of different types of photo ID that are acceptable, most common, of course, being a driver's license, Wisconsin driver's license, or state ID, a passport, a military ID, veteran's ID can now be used, in addition to the documents that the DMV would issue while you're waiting for a license or photo ID. So Andrew is right. It's a big change. We will have people voting here that maybe haven't voted in 4 years or 2 years when that law was not in effect, and so it's really important as we get additional changes in the laws for the voters to try to keep up with those changes and prepare ahead of time.
What should college students know about voting, Andrea?
Well, again, if they have a Wisconsin driver's license, that'll be that will be a great thing. They can use that when they go to vote. If they have to register to vote, which college students have to do fairly frequently because they move, then they will need some kind of proof of residence. And all of that information is available on the Election Commission's myvote.wi.gov.
Say it again.
Myvote.wi.gov.
Thank you.
Website, which is a fantastic resource.
Now, Mike, people might be aware that a federal judge issued orders as recently as last week. Mm-hmm. Can you explain what's that about, and will it be touching them or only a subset of people without photo IDs?
It's a great question, really a subset. And the bottom line, really, as Andrew said again, is it does not affect the photo ID law. It is still in effect. There is something called an ID petition process, which the DMV has in order to help individuals who may not have all of the documents that are required to normally get a license or an ID, like a birth certificate. So there is a process that the Division of Motor Vehicles has to allow people to petition for a temporary receipt. And that temporary receipt can be obtained even if you do not have any of those documents. You will get it with one visit to the DMV. It'll be mailed to you in the last 2 weeks before the election. It will be mailed overnight, and you can use that to vote at this election.
But let's go back to this. We're affecting here. This process that Judge Peterson just got involved in is a relatively small number of potential voters, Andrea?
That's right, and it won't help students who have an out-of-state driver's license or ID that they don't want to surrender. This won't help them. They can use they can use a student ID card from their institution, but they have to check with their own institution to find out whether the standard ID will qualify or whether they're going to need to request a special one. They'll also have to have a proof of enrollment with that.
Now, if someone goes and is not aware of the photo ID mandate now, because it's the law and that's been upheld, can they come back later in the day with some type of photo ID? I mean, they are not disqualified for showing up the first time, are they?
Absolutely. It's called casting a provisional ballot. And so you can come to the polls. If you do not have an ID or an ID that is acceptable, you can cast a ballot and you can come back later in the day and show your photo ID. Or you can come into the municipal clerk's office by the Friday after the election, show the ID, and then your ballot will be counted.
By Friday the 11th, then?
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Okay. What's been the experience with provisional ballots? Are they rare?
They are fairly rare. I mean, we were anticipating a pretty significant increase in provisional ballots with the photo ID law. It has not been as large as we expected, but again, this will be the largest turnout, voters who maybe have not voted often, and so I think we would expect probably to see more provisional ballots than normal in November.
But I want to make it clear that we have not changed the law that allows people to register same-day registration, right?
Correct.
Okay, so we have two separate things. We have a photo ID to vote, but what do I have to present to register and vote at a precinct?
To register, if you have a Wisconsin driver's license or state ID, you have to provide that number that tells who you are. If you don't have that, you can do the last four digits of your social security number. Mm-hmm. And then you also have to establish your Wisconsin residency. And there's a list of acceptable documents for that, which you can show either in paper or on your smartphone.
Okay, that's acceptable.
Yeah, and those are also, the Elections Commission has the listing of those.
And I think it's important to know, usually voter registration at the polls is what takes the most time and what mm-hmm. creates the most lines. And as Andrea alluded to, students move often, and that's sometimes why we see lines more often at campus polling places, is because they have to register or update the registration. There's a registration application that needs to be filled out and signed and processed. And so that's why we encourage people to register ahead of time. As Andrea mentioned, we have a great website, My Vote Wisconsin, that allows you to actually fill out your registration form online, and you will still need to print it out and sign it and mail it in to the clerk, which you can do before. Well, I guess we're past the mailing period. You would need to register in person.
That was one of my questions, so let's land on that right now. Mm-hmm. We're past the deadline where you can mail in your ballot.
October 19th is the deadline for mail-in registration. After that, you can still register at the clerk's office. You can also register on Election Day. Another part of the court case that's significant is the expansion of in-person absentee voting, which now can occur on the weekend before the election. The important point to remember is that you can vote on that weekend if the municipality offers it, but you cannot register on that Saturday or Sunday. Registration closes on that Friday.
That was my next question. To cast an in-person absentee ballot, the absolute deadline, this is important, so let's go back over it. It's when?
To cast an in-person absentee ballot, the court permitted it to occur through the Sunday before the election, but that is up to each municipality.
In terms of when they're open?
Exactly. When they're open,
That's the latest.
And so municipalities are responsible for publishing their hours. I think maybe a lot of municipalities, they may have it on that Saturday before the election, but not the Sunday before the election, just to give themselves time to prepare. And there definitely is no in-person absentee voting on the Monday before the election.
So, Andrea, someone wanting to cast an in-person absentee ballot, because we can no longer cast it by mail, should go to the website of their local government to see when and if they're open?
That's a good way to do it, or call their municipal clerk. And what one thing the league has found, we've had our minivan, our Gear Up to Vote tour, and we've been going around the state and talking to voters and talking to clerks and so forth. And what we found is that in a lot of small towns, the clerk just says, "Well, I'm not going to have set hours for in-person absentee or early voting, but if people call me, I'll make time for it." And so that's another way it's done.
Well, with such an emotional presidential campaign, We've all heard the news stories in which the terms rigged, cheating, fraud, hacked have been used. So here's my question. How secure is Wisconsin's election system, Mike?
Well, we think it's very secure. And this, all of the talk about rigging and fraud, there's been a new dimension to it, really, at this during this election cycle. And much of it has to do with the IT infrastructure around elections and fears of hacking. And there are a couple different concerns on the top of every election administrator's mind. One is the protection of the voter registration system. And the state has excellent security and hosting services that we rely on to protect voter information that might affect whether or not the name ends up on the poll list. As far as the voting equipment itself, there's a couple of really strong protections in that regard. One is that we have a variety of voting equipment used throughout the state. It's all done at the municipal level. It's tested at least three different levels, federal, state, and local level. It's secured. There are security procedures leading up to election day and on election day to keep the voting equipment secure. And it is not connected to the internet. So somebody
That's important.
It is.
When I put my Dane County ballot in there, I'm putting in a machine that is not connected to the internet?
Correct.
Okay. And that's important. Excuse me for interrupting.
Sure. And that means that somebody would need to have physical access to the voting machine itself and really to the memory device that tallies the votes and keeps a record of the vote.
Well, I saw a national TV news story in which they interviewed a voting official in Phoenix, and she said that their system, there had been numerous attempts to hack their system. Have there been attempts to hack Wisconsin's system?
There's been no data breaches into the Wisconsin voter registration system. We have actually had assessments done by the Department of Homeland Security as well as our state division of enterprise technology. They are constantly scanning and monitoring our system to detect any attempts to hack into it.
What do you think, Andrea, has been the effect on potential voters and voting with all the discussion of cheating, rigged, hacked, excuse me?
Yeah, I think the greatest danger is before the election that it might prevent some people from voting, and that would really be a shame.
Because they won't believe in the integrity of the voting process in Wisconsin?
Either that, though they should believe in it, or they may be concerned that there will be unruly observers at the polls. And I think people should know that Wisconsin has good procedures for election observers. The league places election observers ourselves. We place a couple hundred. We'll have like 200 to 300 people in the polls on
right.
election day, and we train them in the rules that were developed. And observers are not allowed to talk to the voters. They may not wear buttons or T-shirts with electioneering type messages.
Can
on
I,
them.
As a voter, wear any button that says Gary Johnson, Jill Stein, Donald Trump, or Hillary Clinton? Can I wear a button?
No, and that's one of the tips we try to emphasize to voters before every election. There's no electioneering allowed. That means wearing any type of button, hat, T-shirt, or sweatshirt that has the name of a candidate or a party that is on the ballot at that election.
I'm sorry, I mm-hmm. interrupted you, Andrea.
No,
go ahead.
And the observers, if they see any concern, they have to speak to the chief inspector. They may not speak to the voters or the other poll workers. And the chief inspector is authorized to limit the number of observers in the polling place, because that chief inspector also has a responsibility to keep an orderly voting process. And they can call, if somebody really acts out, they can call law enforcement. So we believe that the polling places will be orderly. Our observers are constantly amazed. You know, we always get their reports afterwards. They're amazed by the professionalism and the dedication of our local election officials. And so we're pretty confident about that. What we hope people won't be concerned about that.
How many precinct places in Wisconsin?
Well, there are approximately 2,800 polling places,
polling
locations. Some of them may have combined wards, but
and these poll workers have received how many hours of training? Especially now that the legislature rewrites the rules every 2 years.
The chief inspectors who are in charge of each polling place, they have a prescribed number of hours, but for most of the other poll workers, the regular election inspectors, it really depends on how much time the municipal clerk thinks they need to spend with them to review the procedures and the updates in the law.
I want to stay on this for a little bit because I find it absolutely fascinating. I remember a certain recall election in 2012 where there was a huge line. Can someone ahead of me or in back of me try to convince me to vote a certain way? I mean, I was out the door from the polling place. Can someone try to do that, Mike?
So that would also be considered electioneering. And I think there are really two messages. One is that the goal of the statutes and our rules for observers are the voters are there to vote, and the voters are to be left alone inside the polling place. There is an opportunity for people that might want to hand out literature or demonstrate even outside the polling place, but that has to be at least 100 feet away from the entrance to the building where the polls are located.
I want to stay on this. I remember the first time I really noticed an election observer sitting behind or standing behind the poll worker a reasonable distance away. Do I have the right as a voter to say, excuse me, are you an observer from the league? Are you an observer from Ms. Clinton's campaign? Do I have a right to interact with observers?
Do you want to take a step?
Because I was very aware of the observer.
Yeah. I'm not sure what the rules are, and then let Mike do that first.
Sure. I mean, the rules are clear for observers, which are do not interact with the voters unless the voters ask for assistance in some manner. And for voters, I think that the election inspectors, they want to make sure that there's no distractions or disturbances. If it's a quick conversation, I don't think somebody's going to be jumping in, but they don't want delays and a lot of interaction between the observers.
There's actually a distance. I'm sorry, Andrew.
Tell our observers don't talk to the voter unless sometimes the voter is your neighbor or something, and then you can respond politely. But you could also, if you're curious as a voter who's standing behind the poll workers, they all have to sign in. Observers do. And so you would be able to go to the chief inspector and say, I'd like to see that list.
And also, they're required to indicate who they're affiliated with, what organization they're
affiliated with. That was my next question. In light of Mr. Trump, as recently as yesterday, saying he would like his supporters to go and be observers, do his or any other observers have to sign in? How much notice do they they can show up on election day?
Right. So some states have stricter notice requirements. In Wisconsin, it's open to the public. You just need to sign in, indicate what organization you are representing, if any. Interestingly, we are aware we'll have at least three or four international observers in Wisconsin observing our elections on November 8th.
And sometimes our State Department of Justice has observers.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And Milwaukee DA has observers.
Yes.
Are they going to be out on November 8th, to the best of your knowledge?
Yes, we believe they will be. Yes.
Okay, let's go back to the potential hacking. Mm-hmm. I understand that when I put my vote in, that's not hooked up to the internet. But is the total from my precinct or polling place reported over the internet?
It would be reported in a number of different ways, from the polling place to the municipal clerk and to the county clerk.
Verbally, or it
could be over the phone, it could be in person, it could be by fax, or with some of the newer voting equipment, the results are sent by modem from the polling place to the county clerk's office, and then they are combined at the county level.
Any potential for hacking if it goes over the internet?
It's not. It's going over a modem line, it's an instantaneous transaction, so very little risk of having those.
And how
results.
Secure is a statewide master list of voters, Mike?
I was referring to the voter registration database earlier, and we've taken many steps in both the development of it and the maintaining of it to make sure it's secure, along with the Department of Administration.
Some recent Facebook posts to Wisconsin Eye's account have asked whether all write-in votes are counted. How about for precedent?
The rules get a little bit complicated now. If you are a registered write-in candidate, a candidate who has notified us ahead of time, your votes will be counted. If you are not a registered write-in, then your vote, the vote votes are only counted under certain circumstances, such as if a candidate dies who is on the ballot.
Okay. Are you satisfied with this write-in procedure, Andrea?
We don't really have a position on that, but yeah.
Okay. Another question, that a very popular question. If I'm a voter, can I take a selfie with my ballot to show my family members, see, I really did vote for so-and-so? The issue of selfies?
Another great current trending topic. You know, the statute people should be aware of is that there is actually a criminal statute for people prohibiting individuals from showing their marked ballot. And so if voters are taking a photo of their ballot with the intention of posting it on Facebook or showing it to another individual, there's potential for criminal prosecution there. And we always like to make voters aware of that, point it out. There's not specifically a prohibition against the act of taking a photo, but if it leads to showing the ballot to somebody else, there's potential criminal penalties.
And the reason for that is to prevent vote selling.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
So that I don't show someone voted a certain way and then they pay me.
You paid me X, and see, I lived up to my end of the deal.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. Is that really widespread, do you think, Andrea?
I can't imagine that it is.
Okay. You know, and I think maybe, you know, in older days it may have been more prevalent, which probably led to the election bribery statute, which has not really been reconsidered or updated in the current digital age.
So someone who doesn't see this show takes a selfie. What's going to happen to she or he as a voter?
A selfie of their ballot?
Yes.
A selfie of
the ballot.
I think,
ta-da!
Right. Our instructions to election inspectors will be to try not to create more of a scene than is warranted, and also to approach the voter and educate them that there are penalties if they do share that photo with other individuals.
Andrea, if I vote and I suspect some type of a problem, what should I do?
If you suspect a problem with your ballot?
Well, maybe I don't like some, I'm curious about some activity, or there may be a problem with my ballot. Obviously, if there's a problem with my ballot, I work with the poll workers. But maybe I don't like something that occurred outside or something.
Sure. There are numbers you can call. You can call the Wisconsin Election Commission. You can also call the Election Protection Hotline, which is 866-OUR-VOTE, whatever those numbers are.
Okay.
866-OUR-VOTE. And that line is staffed by lawyers who are trained in Wisconsin election law, and they can take it from there.
Well,
or you can call the League of Women Voters. But we may end up calling, we would likely call either the election commission or the lawyers.
If I have a question about something at my polling place, should I stay there or should I go home and make some of these calls? What do you recommend, Mike? Or Andrea?
I think the first thing you might want to do, even before you make one of those calls, would be to talk to the chief inspector in the polling place. That is the person who is responsible for that polling place, and it may be that you can just get it cleared up right then and there, or that person will explain to you why it is the way it is.
Now, our polls open at
7 a.m.
and close
at 8 p.m.
And is there a chief inspector on duty at all times?
Yes, there is. There should be. And Andrew makes a great point. I mean, we like to talk about escalating any questions or issues. So talk to the chief inspector. If that doesn't satisfy the individual, go to the municipal clerk. If that doesn't work, contact our office or one of the observer organizations.
Now, it's intriguing. People may think they're voting directly for Mr. Trump or Ms. Clinton, but they're not. They're voting for a slate of electoral college. Explain that, please, Andrew or Mike.
I think I'll let Mike
okay.
explain that.
Mike.
It is a little bit of a quirky procedure. You know, dates back, obviously, to the founding of the nation and how we elect the president. So each party that has a spot on the ballot. So right now we have five parties that have spots on the ballot for their candidates. They are entitled to pick a slate of presidential electors. Okay. Wisconsin gets 10 electors, one for each congressional district and two at-large.
I was going to ask you, how
electors.
Is that number? Okay.
And same as our representation in Congress. And whichever party wins the presidential contest, those individuals will meet in the state capitol in the governor's office in December and cast their electoral votes for their candidate. And then those are all assembled through the Electoral College process.
And it takes, we've all heard from the networks, 270 to be elected president of the United States.
Right.
Maybe a final question, or close to final. Is there anything, given all the changes in our election laws, is there anything that potentially could cause problems on November 8th, Andrea? What do you have any worries about, given all the changes?
I think my worries are, they're about all the talk about the election being rigged. I find that there is no evidence for that. There is a lot of evidence to dispute that, but I find that potentially dangerous if it scares people away, if it keeps people home. That's one concern I have. Another is just the documentation that is needed, both to register and to then get a ballot, that may keep some people from voting. And in some cases, it's utterly unnecessary. For instance, I talked with a woman once who didn't go and vote because at the last minute she realized that she still had her old address on her driver's license. That would have been perfectly fine. And that's really a shame if that happens.
And anything keeping you up? You sleeping pretty well?
By the time I get home, yes. I will say, you know, we do a lot of contingency planning for unexpected events. We coordinate with federal and state law enforcement and other agencies. The municipal clerks have a big job to do, as well as the election inspectors. We'll have 30,000 Wisconsinites who are working at the polls roughly at this election. So those are just your neighbors that are out there trying to keep up with these rules. So we ask voters to have patience, be prepared, consider becoming a poll worker yourself. Clerks are always looking for good people to help out.
One more question just occurred to me. Exit polls. Mm-hmm. If after I vote, someone approaches me in an exit poll, I can choose to participate or not, right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
Are there any limits on those conducting exit polls? Does it have to be done outside?
It does, outside of the room where the voting is taking place. We actually have a standard letter that we issue to organizations that are conducting exit polls that notify us to give them some instruction about how to conduct it in a manner that does not interfere with the voting.
So you put them on notice,
right.
But I, as a voter, am under no obligation to participate.
Exactly.
That's right.
And what are the limits on the news media that may drop into my polling place just to see how it's going, how long the lines are?
Yeah, the news media is one organization who is allowed to take photos, videos, still cameras, but we ask them to try to do it in a way that is not really focusing on voters' faces, just sort of stock footage of the process.
So when I'm waiting to vote, I cannot take a picture of the poll workers and my fellow voters? Is that right?
We discourage that. Observers, it is definitely a rule for observers. The rule for other individuals, voters, as I said, is a little bit unclear, but we tend to discourage anything that's going to just distract from the voting process.
Okay, maybe final statements here. Andrea, you're satisfied that we have a very efficient voting system in Wisconsin and very little, if no chance for it to be rigged, cheated, hacked, fraud?
I think the chance for it to be rigged or cheated is very low. I think if people spent more time in the polls, as observers do, they would see that it would be hard to cheat in Wisconsin.
Okay. Any final words to the voters on November 8th?
Go and vote, and don't take a picture of your thing, and then go home and watch the returns.
Any final words?
As Andrea mentions, we have a great website, My Vote Wisconsin. People can find their polling place, who's on their ballot, all of that in advance of the election. We have another website dedicated to the photo ID law called Bring It to the Ballot. And so we encourage voters to get out. We were talking a little bit earlier. Wisconsin traditionally falls just behind Minnesota in the highest voter turnout, traditionally, and we're shooting for our Gopher and Viking neighbors to the west to try to beat that this year. So we encourage people to go and vote.
The Vikings did to the Packers, but that's a whole different issue. Thank you. This is great information leading up to the November 8 elections. I want to thank Andrea Kaminsky, Executive Director of the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin, and Mike Haas, Administrator of the Wisconsin Elections Commission. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thanks.